You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Christina Ramirez. And what we talk about is professional and personal pivots. I get to talk with my guests about that a lot because the focus of the show is choices and changes and how it impacts the path of our life. One of the things that I think is helpful about this conversation, this story, is that some of the pivots were intentional choices that Christina knew she was making. At least one of them was not her choice at all. And one pivot is a reverse Erno move where she was going in one direction and decided to go back to what was working before. And that particular reverse move, I think that kind of thing happens a lot, but it doesn't get talked about as much as it should. So when it happens to us, we sometimes think that we've done something wrong. That was a super vague description of what this conversation is about, but there's actually quite a bit of drama in Christina's story, and I think you're going to love it. So let's do it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Christina Ramirez, are you ready for a fun chat today?
I'm all for it. Let's go.
I have a couple warm-up questions for you. I start all of my conversations asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So share with us where you live these days.
That is such a hard question. So I live these days in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but I've only been here for like 4 months. So it's not quite home yet. Home is wherever I happen to be at the moment. I've lived all around the world, so I don't really have a home like that.
Okie dokie. I love that answer. So what's something that you're enjoying, or you could, I mean, I would say that you love, but let's say you're enjoying about Pittsburgh so far.
I'm actually loving Pittsburgh because it is not a super big city. It's 300,000, but it has a lot of museums, a lot of art, a lot of culture, a lot of sports, like a dining scene. So it really has so much going for it. I think it feels, it's a very underrated city. Like it's a great place to come.
Love that answer. So today we're going to talk about a personal and professional, a couple of personal and professional pivots you've made, a bit of a reverse Uno move, as I'm calling something you did in your life, that has gone on in the past several years. Are you ready for that conversation?
I am, an open book. Just
all right. So for the people in the audience, I'm going to catch them up on the backstory of our relationship real quick. You and I actually know each other in real life. We did triathlon in the same time in Miami and around the world. Our kids are close in age, but they never overlapped in schools or hobbies. And the only reason this is relevant to everybody who's in the audience is that I'm a little bit familiar with some of the things that have gone on with part of your story. And that means that I'm either going to do a great job of helping walk through. It's either going to be great or it's going to be a disaster. Because when you pitched the topic, you were like, hey, I'd like to talk about this. And I was like, okay, fine, but how about that? And you were like, whatever, Am. So so we're going to begin and end kind of in the same place, I think. Here's the question after I rambled all that time. Back when the kids were in elementary school, you started a run club for the kids at school. This is the way I remember it. Where, tell me if I'm right or wrong about that and where this idea came from.
Sure. So it was right after both you and I competed in Ironman Lake Placid.
Okay.
And I had come back to Miami. I wasn't teaching anymore. I had been a preschool teacher. And, you know, when I was in high school, I was the girl in the back of the gym smoking pot. I had like no interest in anything. And I got myself into a lot of trouble. And after Lake Placid, it was my third Ironman. Who I was, how I thought about things, my entire mindset had completely changed. And I'm convinced that had I had that mindset growing up, maybe I wouldn't have pulled half of the stupid stunts that I pulled. So I wanted my kids and I wanted all kids to have and grow up with that mindset. And I went to their elementary school. I think they were like in first and second grade. And I couldn't do swimming. I couldn't do biking. So running it was, even though running was my least favorite of the three sports. And that's how it started. I had 20 kids And I took them to do a 5K race in Miami Beach. And Amy, it was miserable. They were tiny, so they cried, and it was hot and it was hard. But then at the last 50 yards, they start hearing the music and everybody's clapping because there are these little kids, and those kids booked it. And when they got their medals and I started taking their pictures, I could see in them that change, that feeling like, oh my God, that was so hard. I can't wait to do it again. So I started developing games for that after school club that mimic the race, that is hard, that is challenging, but because the kids are supported, they're going to get to the other side of that challenge and feel that empowerment. And that's, I believe, how you build grit and resilience and that confident mindset. And that's what I did. That's how I started.
So was it always called Dashram, or was it like Kids Club?
Yeah, so we started. I was the I'm Possible Run Club.
Oh,
And
that's what I remember. Okay, I
yeah.
am possible. Yes.
Yes. But so it hit, it struck a nerve. Like I started growing. I had like over 200 kids in Miami. And I realized, man, I have like a nice little business here. So I started teaching other moms how to do that for themselves. And I had to trademark it. And I couldn't trademark I'm Possible. I tried I'm Possible, Empowered, I'm Powered, like everything. And my late husband said, everybody thinks Häagen-Dazs means something, but really it's a made-up word. And oh my
I didn't
God.
know that.
Yeah, it was a
No.
completely made-up word, not even Danish. So I was like, that's genius. So I went to the kids and I asked them for different words. And somebody said dash, and somebody probably said strong, but I was like in the Danish mode and I said strom, and we put Dashstrom together, and that's how we became Dashstrom.
So I love that. One of the things that I love about it is that it has grown, it has become very successful, and it is like breaking all of the rules of best practices for naming a kids program, online program in the United States. It's like, it's like it's not easy to type. Nobody knows what it means. So I love that. I'm like, yeah, no, I totally get it. All right, so at some point is when at this point, your life is like sort of motoring along. You're going through like some transitions, but like right around here, you begin to make some big changes in your personal and professional life. I'm going to walk you through some of them that I remember. If I get it wrong, let me know. Correct me if we're there. You guys decide to move to New Mexico. Like you and I were living in Miami, and that could be a whole podcast. I talk to people all the time about moving, but we're going to go through it because a lot happens in your life. Except I do feel that one of the things that spurred this move was a change in your family and grief. I don't know if I remember that right, but is that one of the things that was going on about why you guys picked up and moved across country?
I think so. My dad died in April and my mom in July of the same year. So definitely grief, but I don't think we moved because of grief. I think their passing allowed us, I was their caretaker, and
Yeah.
so their passing allowed a little bit more space in my life and in things that we wanted to do. And I grew up traveling and I grew up living all around the world, and my kids walked around Miami like they owned the place. Like I was the coach at the school, and so like everybody knew me and everybody knew them, and they never had that experience of being the new kid in class, of living somewhere completely different. So we wanted to just shake things up a little bit, and we said, why don't we just go somewhere for a year? And we were on a road trip and we ended up in Taos, New Mexico, which is a town of 5,000. There's like seven stoplights, there's no buildings, no elevators. And I'm like, why not here? I mean, this is as different as it could be within the US. And really, that's how we moved. If you ask my kids, they're like, why did your parents move? My son would always say, it's because my mom is a hippie. So that's the story.
Because my mom is a hippie. All right. So New Mexico, I mean, that does sound like to me, like a big change from Miami for sure. But in New Mexico, you and your family fall in love with mountains and with snow sports. You take up snowboarding. And I thought that this is when, I think I have the time frame. I thought that this was when Dastrom moved across the United States, like it sort of expanded. Is that kind of right or wrong?
Yeah, so I needed to find a way to make a living if we were going to do this move. But my entire business was very local in Miami because I was working in the schools in Miami. So I had to find a way to be able to bring what I was doing in Miami to other places. So that's where the online business started. And this was 2018. Coaching, like online coaching, wasn't a big thing at all. But I found a niche in there. And then I started teaching moms how to do what I had done in Miami and just replicate that model. And that's how I made a living, you know. But it was wonderful because I worked for myself. I worked online. So I could work in the morning, then head to the mountain in the afternoon, do a couple of runs in the ski resort, and come back to the house to another coaching call. So it was really wonderful.
Really wonderful. So you're in New Mexico, this is happening. This is where catastrophe really strikes, in this story. Your husband dies. And you mentioned that he was your late husband. You call this the single most life-changing event in your life, which I don't think is an exaggeration. And it's not going to be a surprise to anybody that that would be how you would describe it. You don't have to, but do you want to share what happened?
Sure. I don't mind sharing about it because I also think like information is helpful to somebody out there. It was 2021 and he wasn't feeling well. But he wasn't going to the doctor, and this was like maybe a couple a month, maybe two tops. And when I finally said, you know what, let's just go to the ER because by the time we get an appointment and then they are going to order tests, like it's going to be another 2 months. So let's just go, you know, and we can figure this out. And he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And Amy, 7 weeks later, he passed away. It was violently fast, for him. He didn't have a chance at all.
So this is gonna sound like I'm making it about me, but I don't think I am. But from my perspective, as somebody who knew you in person and then you moved across the country, so we were only connected online, this was such an intense personal experience, and yet you had this public facing social media profile from blogging and building your online business. And then we were connected as friends. And so this, as I was watching this happen, and I was thinking, we're so far apart. And here is this very private, very intense thing. And I kept thinking about how social media, the word we use is it amplifies things. And I was like watching this unfold and I was thinking, oh my gosh, such a personal, private, horrible thing that she's going through. It's hard to tell people private things that happen in our life, but in social media, they can comment back. And I was like, oh, this looks hard, really, really hard. And I just think that sucks. That's not a question, but watching you go through it, that I was like, that looks really like it's hard, it's sad, and also like it's playing out in a space where you wouldn't want it to.
So he had a surgery and then spent 11 days in the ICU and then he asked to be taken off life support. So I would use Facebook as a way to just tell people what was going on instead of having to answer 20 million freaking texts and phone calls. Like I didn't want to talk to anybody. So that was just my way of communicating to people who were asking me what was going on. But I think, you know, what was actually wonderful for me is that it gave me words to kind of just express things. And once he passed, I remember I'd be going anywhere in town, and like my town is very small, right? 5,000, so everybody knew us. I felt supported and I felt connected because I can't, like, everybody had read it and everybody had followed my journey. And I have people that would come up to me, or even not in Taos, but in, like they would write me and it's like, you know, I would wake up and the first thing I did was check Facebook to see what was happening. And so it wasn't for me, it felt wonderful. It felt like
Oh, good.
I had an army of people that were kind of going through this process, which was awful, but they went through it with me. So for me, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Oh my goodness, I'm so glad I brought it up then because like when I was watching it, I was like, it felt like it could have been, magnifying the pain and like an echo chamber, but
There is so much pain that it cannot be more amplified. It's
okay.
like the way I describe it is like it's all of a sudden you hit a wall and there's no moving to the side, there's no moving forward. It's so much and so big. There is no way it could be worse. So having that shared grief with my community and with people, that knew me and people that didn't know me. Yeah, it felt good. It felt like that wall, like there were other people there with me.
I love that. I love that description. Okay, so you make a pivot here,
Yes.
and you write a book which is entitled Empowered by Discomfort, Face Challenges with Confidence Using the 20% Power Principle of Discomfort. Nice brief title there, Christina. You begin speaking on this topic of discomfort. You say it's not a grief book, but I think it was, it's tangential to grief, even if it's not directly. Looking back, you had a choice. You did not have to write a book about your lessons and your experience. So looking back, like using the power of the rearview mirror, like walk us through the motivation of not just writing down your stories, but going through the process of publishing it and making it public.
I always wanted to write a book. I've always wanted it. Even like when I was in high school or in college, and I would sit down and I would write stories, and I've always loved writing. And I felt like I heard myself repeat things over and over and over again, especially because I was coaching. And at that time, I had like Dashram had like 250 clients. So there was a lot of that going. It was my world. And I was just like, well, I might as well just put what I know on paper because I've always wanted to do this anyways. And I started my book on December 26 because we were in Angel Fire, which is in a ski resort. And I had to have it. I sent it to Jack Canfield, who's the author of Chicken Soup for the Soul. So I had like a group with him and I had to send him a draft by February 5th. I wrote my entire book in that time.
Wow.
It just came out of me. It's nothing that I didn't know. It's nothing that I haven't said a million times, and yet and it's very authentic to me. So it was very easy.
All right, so you quickly wrote it. You begin to speak on this topic, which is slightly different than the coaching and the Dashram message. And from where I was watching, it looked like you were making a pivot in your business. It was like, all right, now I'm doing this new thing, and I'm gonna speak on that. Is that like a semi-accurate assessment? This is like you were gonna go in this direction a little bit.
I was gonna go in that direction, but I don't think it's different than what I taught the kids. It's all
Okay.
the same thing. It's just a different way of expressing the same concepts. Like everything that is in the book, we teach the kids obviously in a different way. But I was like, well, maybe I'll try adults for a little bit because I was burnt out and my business was booming. I mean, we were doing really well, but I wasn't doing really well. So this gave me an opportunity to just do something different and, take the message and not having to be so careful with what I say, but being able to empower, to work in the field that I like, but working with adults only.
Okay, so maybe I'm a little bit off base calling the next thing that happens your reverse Uno move. But this is what I'm calling the reverse Uno move, and I think it's helpful to think about, and because I do a lot of talking to people about moving through transitions and making choices and the impact on the path of your life. But the path that we follow is very much not usually just straightforward in one direction forever. And so that's the reason I think that this kind of reverse order move is like, a helpful thing. I don't think people talk about the corrections and the really reversing and going back to something as much as it might happen. You release the book, you're speaking, I'm watching you do these things from a distance, I'm cheering you on remotely. And then you go back to Full Storm Dashram. It's like, all right, back to Run Club. Is that a little bit about what happened a little bit?
Yes, and
Okay.
I have tried to kill Run Club at least two times in the past. When I first left Miami, I was like, "Well, what do I do?" When Joe died, like this time. But I know the freaking thing works, you know, and I know the impact that it has on kids, and I know how good it is. And it almost felt like somebody, I met somebody, and he's like, you know, I think if you change the business model, you have something here that can be venture scalable and that you can reach millions of kids. And that's all I needed, because that's what I've always wanted. So I just didn't know how to do it. And the way that I was doing it in the past, I hit a ceiling, and that I wasn't willing to go back to. But the concept, like what I was teaching the kids and the kids, that kept pulling me back and back and back. So that's how that pivot. Does that
It
explain a little
does.
bit?
No, I think it does. I'm going to come back to it in a second to let you reflect on it again. There's another cross-country move in here. This is when you go from Taos to Pittsburgh, but we're not going to talk about that specifically because, you know, it would be another 9-hour conversation. So you mentioned it. The pullback here was that you figured out a way to level up Dashtram. It's been really fun for me to watch you and as your friend see this happen, that story move from Facebook onto LinkedIn for people who may have lost track of the plot and are following Christina on social media. But you mentioned some things in when you put the pitch in, and I want to sort of give you a chance to talk about it as like a concept and not like events in your life directly. You mentioned that there are a lot of times where you were questioning the decisions you were making, questioning everything, and letting go of things and reinventing yourself. And those three things sort of showed up in a very little paragraph. Those are really pretty words. You're a writer, you're a very smart person, all of those things. But those things, even though they sound pretty, those are very hard things to deal with. Their challenges. And I want to give you a chance to talk about what you see as the connection in your own experience between making choices, having doubts, letting go, and reinvention.
Yeah, I think you first have to be willing to be wrong, right? I think a lot of us deep down inside know that we're going the wrong path, but admit, quote unquote, admitting it is embarrassing, or it might be like you're afraid what other people are going to think, or maybe what that means to you. And I'm not one of those people. I'm very authentic to me, so I'm not going to be doing something that doesn't feel good or aligned or what I want to do, because then I'm going to do it very poorly. I throw an adult tantrum when I'm doing things that I don't want to do. So I think if you're willing to be like, okay, I don't know, maybe somebody else knows, or this isn't feeling good, like there has to be a better way, then all these other opportunities start opening up, because you're not married to what you're doing. So I'm now married to my pro the problem that I'm solving. How do I reach millions of kids? I'm not married to the how. So maybe the how of the things that I'm doing now might change a year from now, might change it 2 years from now. But that's all right. That's growth, you know. And I think that if we, and that's part of that discomfort that I talk about in the book, that if we're okay with feeling that, you know, that if something doesn't feel good, it doesn't mean stop. It means figure it out. It means like pay attention. This is a sign that's telling you need to change something here, and it's the next path for your growth evolution.
Okay, so that sounds like that tracks with the business stuff. Is it a slightly different experience when you're in the situation where it wasn't something you chose, the loss of parents, the loss of a spouse, and like you said, the grief was so all-encompassing that it was more than you can challenge. Did the same sort of thing process there, or was it a little bit different?
I think with that is like there, I didn't have a choice, right? I
Right.
don't, I couldn't, I didn't choose to have my parents die or to have my husband die. And based on Joe's death, there were a lot of other decisions that I had to make that I did not like, that I didn't want to make, and that had I had my way, would never have happened. But yet here we are, right? Like,
Yeah.
so I think it's also part of that acceptance of I can't fight someone's death. They died,
Yeah.
period. So when you stop fighting and you let go and you're like, this sucks, this is not where I want to be, this is not what I want to do, but I'm still alive. So how do I make my life the life that I want to live, and starting from there. For me, I'm very lucky that my business aligns very well with my life and with what
Yeah.
I care about and with what I do. So maybe I was just lucky that way, that one kind of came to rescue the other, if that makes sense. They kind of joined in together.
Yeah, I think I do see the parallels, which is that we don't always choose the things that happen to us. And so in one case, you're accepting, I don't have the knowledge or the information to know this without help. And in the other, you're accepting, I may not want to be here and I don't like this, but what are my choices or what are my obligations in front of me?
Yeah. And I'll give you an example. So we were in New Mexico in this little town called Taos. My kids went to high school in Santa Fe, which is an hour and a half. It's a public school, but it was an art school and it's a boarding school. So because it takes kids from all across the state. So they live in the dorm from Monday to Friday, and then you pick them up and you go home for the weekend and you come back on Monday. That was not sustainable. Like, they were miserable. I was miserable. I was by myself in Taos. They were in Santa Fe. So I moved to Santa Fe for 3 years. My sons were a freshman and sophomore in high school when all of this happened. That move, I did not want. That move sucked for me because it's not what I went to New Mexico to do. It's not where I wanted to be. Like, and I felt like I'm only here because my husband died. And that, those are like, that was my opportunity to face the challenges, right? That was a huge discomfort of mine because I also didn't want to live 3 years because I knew that once they graduated, then I had the choice of doing whatever, I would either leave or stay. But I didn't want to live 3 years counting days or thinking I'm only, like I had to reframe that in order to make those 3 years enjoyable or at least livable,
Right.
without that. So I think your mindset is also what determines a lot of this. Like, what is it that you want at the end of the day? And I just want to be happy, like I want to live a life that was meant, that was well lived, whether that is in my relationships, in my work, in my boys. That's all I want. Like, everything else kind of just happen, like it just becomes what it becomes. It doesn't matter the location, it doesn't matter the business itself. It just matters that you have something to do and someone to love.
So, looking back, there is a through line very clearly from the I Am Possible through to Empowered by Discomfort into Dastrum and the scalability in your life today. But if you think back to post Ironman Lake Placid, where we were together, and you came back and started the run club, did you have any idea that that was what you were putting together?
No, my entire goal, my kids were at the School of Rock, and it cost me $500 a month for them to do their lessons. And so I was like, I just need to find $500 a month. That was my goal. And that's how I started. I had no idea any of this was going, like any of this was going to happen, or we were going to become what we were going to become. And we've already coached over 12,000 children across 41 states. I mean, what? That's crazy. I
It is
still think
banana
that's crazy.
cakes.
Yeah. So yes, I had zero idea, but I followed the thread, right? It's almost like breadcrumbs are left, and you just do the next right thing, and you do the next right thing, and you do the next or wrong thing. You just do the next thing, and then you end up somewhere. And I think that's what happened to me.
I love that story. I do. All right. So, in a minute, we're going to wrap up with the final questions. I want to give you a chance to talk about the book and about Dastrum and how people can connect with you and find you after they stream the show.
Sure. Well, thank you. The book is available wherever books are sold, and it's a very easy read, and it was intentionally done that way. So I hope that people can just read it quickly and get a lot out of it. And I use that for public speaking and that kind of stuff. Dastrum is right now we're focused in Pittsburgh and in Denver, but we are creating a movement because kids are spending an average of 7.5 hours per day in front of a screen. And screen time is directly tied to obesity, anxiety, and depression. And that's the problem that we're solving. So if anybody's interested in working in that, for their kids or helping us get that message out and the tools to combat that, then please reach out or visit our website or just email me.
Very cool. I think a lot of people are motivated on that. But like many, many things, there's a lot of people having the conversation. There's not always ways to get involved and to work on the project in trying to find solutions. So I think that's brilliant. The links to both Dashram and the Empowered by Discomfort book and the website will be in the show notes wherever you're listening or watching the show, and also in the email newsletter I send out. So I tell everybody in every single episode, the easiest way to get the links is always to be a subscriber to the email newsletter. That's my pitch every single time. All right, Christina, are you ready to wrap this up with my final three questions?
Absolutely.
So usually I say these are not connected to anything and they're totally random, but that's absolutely a lie with you because you and I know each other. Question number one, there was a time where you and I both did a lot of swimming, biking, and running. As one of the founding three members of my imaginary retired triathlon bloggers club, do you do any swimming, biking, or running these days?
Well, I've had a hip replacement and I have another hip replacement next month, so no running for me until this hip is fixed. I quit biking because it was too dangerous. And swimming, I have a problem in my arm. So
No.
it's like it sucks, but I'm hoping to get back to all three because I'm gonna have a new hip, so that will allow me to run. I can take care of my arm next so that I can go back to the pool. That's the one I miss the most. And here in Pittsburgh, there are a lot of trails that are like old train tracks, so
Yep.
they're protected from cars. And you can actually go from Pittsburgh all the way to DC almost without going on road, like some places you do. That's my kind of biking. So I look forward to being able to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, rails to trails is what we call
Oh, okay.
the train tracks that are converted to trails. And it's spectacular, but it is not a thing that exists in Miami, Florida, where we have, unfortunately, the statistic of being the most dangerous city to bike in the country. So that is, we have gone that path together. Okay, so what is, on that note, question two, what is one way that you try to find or create tranquility or peace in your busy modern life?
Yeah, I'm a meditator, but it's not really meditating. I call them my little journeys. So my kids think I'm very weird, and I think that's why the hippie thing comes in. But I put on, it's called shamanic drumming. So just like do, 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 do.
Yeah.
And you kind of go on like these journeys. No drugs involved, just I love that. And every night before I go to sleep, I just go on a journey and I like there are different topics or different things that I learn. And I can 100% say, like, I have changed so much because of that. And it helps me so much to be able to be grounded and centered and also like aware and hopefully a better person for it.
All right, so you like listen, it's just shamanic drumming or it's like guided meditation recordings.
No voice, just like I go to
Just that.
YouTube. Yeah, and I just get a track that's like a couple of hours that just all it is like do 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 do, and I go to La La Land.
Very cool. That's amazing. Okay, very good. Here's one. What is a skill or something that you learned in either high school or college that you still use today?
Oh, okay. So I did high school. My freshman year was in Brazil. Sophomore and junior were in Casablanca, Morocco. And my senior year was in a boarding school in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut. So the tool that I use that I learned in high school is that connecting to people, like that talking to people, no matter who they are, where they're from, because that was survival, right? Like I was always the foreigner. And I think I also became very good at helping the new, helping the newcomer, whether that is like somebody new to our triathlon team or somebody new to the city that I'm living in or to my business, it's that embracing and that like, okay, we're going to be like, let me hold your hand until you figure it out for yourself and then you can go do whatever you want to do.
Which I think you still apply today. That like connects to
Absolutely.
that's such a great thing. I'm so happy I asked that question. That's it. Christina Ramirez, thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
You're welcome. It's such a pleasure to be here. Congrats to you too for all the things that you're accomplishing and this amazing podcast. And I hope to be back soon.
Yay. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.